Imagine if Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping threatened a hostile takeover of Greenland or the Panama Canal. So what about the president-elect of the United States? Is Donald Trump serious? Trump, whose growing fixation comes 2 weeks ahead of Inauguration Day in the U.S. He even sent his son to Greenland, much to the dismay of Denmark, that EU members ruled Greenland since 1814. Today, it needs U.S.-led NATO support to stare down the more pressing threat of the Russians in the Baltic Sea. Trump's goaded other allies, suggesting a merger with Canada on the day when his liberal opposite to the north, Justin Trudeau, announced his resignation, or to his south, suggesting we rename the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America. How do the Trudeaus of this world react beyond performative politics? What's it all about? Is the man who wants a Ukraine deal on day one an isolationist or an imperialist at heart? What sets him apart from his Russian and Chinese counterparts? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking if Trump is serious. Joining us from Copenhagen, he's Denmark's former foreign minister. Villy Søvndal is today member of the European Parliament for the Green Left Party. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for the invitation to come along.
Philip Golub is professor of political science at the American University of Paris. You're the author of Power, Profit and Prestige, A History of American Imperial Expansion. Happy New Year. Welcome back to the show.
Happy New Year.
Digital strategist André Lezekoug-Pietri, president of the Joint European Disruption Initiative. Remind us again what that is.
That's the European Agency for Disruptive Innovation. So we basically invent the technologies of tomorrow, those who will bring Europe back into the race.
And that's certainly a part of this power play that we're talking about. And from Montreal, Canada, Guillaume Lavoie, political scientist at UQAM, the University of Quebec at Montreal. Welcome to the show.
Hello, great to be with you.
You can always listen, that's right, listen to the France 24 debate, wherever podcasts are streamed. Yeah, the smiles are forced and the reactions more and more pointed after some surprising statements out of Mar-a-Lago, Florida on Tuesday. Delana D'Souza has more.
A provocative press conference from the U.S. president-elect. Donald Trump laid out his territorial ambitions for the United States from his Mar-a-Lago estate.
We're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, which has a beautiful ring.
But it's more than just changing names that Trump is after. He reiterated his call to make Canada the 51st state and outlined how he'd do it.
You get rid of that artificially drawn line and you take a look at what that looks like. And it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada.
Canada's outgoing Prime Minister put out a statement on X saying there isn't a snowball's chance in hell Canada would become part of the United States. In recent weeks, Trump has been making calls on how he wants to take control of Greenland and the Panama Canal. And during his press conference, he refused to rule out military force to achieve his goals.
I'm not going to commit to that now. It might be that you'll have to do something. Look, the Panama Canal is vital to our country. We need Greenland for national security purposes.
Officials in both Panama and Denmark, which control key areas of Greenland's affairs, reacted to the latest proposals from Trump.
The sovereignty of our canal is non-negotiable.
It is only Greenland who can decide and define Greenland's future.
During Tuesday's press conference, Donald Trump also put America's NATO allies on notice, saying spending on defense should be raised to 5% of GDP, up from the current 2%.
I think NATO should have 5%, yeah.
So, Villy Søvndal, which of the threats do you take more seriously? Donald Trump warning his allies to increase their defense spending from 2% of GDP to 5%, or this takeover of Greenland?
Well, I think we are all a bit confused about what he says, because he says so many different things. 4 years ago, his proposal was that he would like to buy Greenland, and the Greenland government said that it was not possible. Greenland was not for sale. Now he's trying in another way. Now he's trying with threats to get in control of Greenland, threatening both with military means and with economic means. And that's a new and harder approach from Trump's side.
Because there was the U.S. Secretary of State in Paris earlier who said, Look, let's not talk about this long. It's not going to happen. What was your gut reaction when you heard Trump on Tuesday?
Well, first of all, a bit of surprise. Is it one of his crazy ideas? Is that serious meant? I mean, no one can decide the future for Greenland, but the Greenlanders themselves. And we are not going to accept threats. I also think Trump did not understand that threatening with duties, fair of duties, is not possible because we are part of a union, which is also a custom union. And I mean, trying to punish Denmark would be punishing not only Denmark, but would be met with countermeasures from the whole EU. So I think he has to understand the nature of cooperation in Europe better than he does.
All right. Is Trump serious? Yes, he is. Blair's French language tabloid, Le Journal de Montréal. And since Montrealers are bilingual, copywriters threw in an oh my God there. You can see it into the headline for good measure. Guillaume Lavoie, what is this about when it comes to Canada? Is it just personal enmity? It doesn't like Justin Trudeau, or is it about something else?
No, I think it's as puzzling as it it is. It's very much a Trump 101, very much on steroid this time. But his behavior is such that he usually does this: draw in a very offensive statement or a very out of this world demand in order to test the other part, the other party, to destabilize, to rattle. And then if it bites, if it excites, if it puts his name in the papers, then he enjoys it very much. And he's trying to create both leverage and visibility. And yes, it is not a reflex that's very statesmanlike, but that's not who he is. And even though this is much more than what we saw from Trump in his first term, it's still the same type of behavior. And perhaps one thing that Trump will have to pay for this later on, or the United States, rather, that's he's going after the EU, Denmark, Canada, Panama. Those are all allies, long-standing allies. It's perhaps dangerous or ill-advised to go about demonstrating that it cannot be a trusted partner. Now, in Canada, we know the U.S. very well. It's our neighbor. It's our number one trading partner. We're their number one trading partner. And we know that the American president, though a very powerful player, is not the sole decision maker in the United States. And therefore, we should look for reactions from other players, especially from Congress.
And so far, the reaction's been muted. André Lezicoupiacci, a few years back, when there was a first incarnation of Donald Trump, you were in this very studio, and you were talking about it. We were pondering his sort of madman theory of diplomacy with the Chinese. Today, is this the same playbook that we were witnessing?
Yeah, I think it's the same playbook. And I think even worse than his action or his way of behaving is the reaction. I mean, this is, as Guillaume said, vintage Trump. Remember the famous TV show with Larry King, where basically he destabilized Larry King by saying, "You smell." And that is his technique. He wants to test if the other one has basically guts to react. And if he's feeling weakness, he's actually going to go. And hear the reactions of the Europeans, either muted. We didn't hear any of the Danish 26 partners reacting to that.
We've heard them. This Wednesday.
Very, very little. I mean, this is a direct attack on sovereignty of an EU associated entity. I'm not a specialist to exactly tell the details of the relationship between Greenland and Denmark. But if we don't react much more forcefully, I think we're just showing for the next 4 years how the U.S. and how its president will react. And the one difference I would say to what Guillaume just mentioned is Trump is much stronger. I mean, everybody is aligning with him, from the tech giants House of Representatives to the senators. I mean, Mar-a-Lago has become the new White House. I mean, even now Meloni has gone to it. And I expect the 26 other
heads of states in the EU to go to Canossa and basically do kowtow in front of the president. So I think the problem is not Trump. The problem is our reaction.
But of course, Philip Golub, if you're a European leader, you know, we're 2 weeks out from Inauguration Day in the United States. You don't want to burn your bridges yet.
Well, I mean, I actually would like to come back to the question of Trump. We should get away from psychologizing the person. We should assume that when he says something, he means it, even if he doesn't mean it literally. He means it. He's an ultranationalist who has a continentalist vision of the United States' role from all the way to the far north, from Greenland through Canada down to Mexico and beyond. He's the current representative of a long tradition, a long line of American nationalist, ultra-nationalist expansionists like Henry Cabot Lodge, who brought down the League of Nations in 1920.
Yeah, but he was not president of the United States.
He is, no. So all I'm saying is you have to take him seriously to some extent. He's not going to invade Canada, that's obvious. He's engaged in coercive economic and public diplomacy, which has an aim, which is to the assertion of American national power over his allies. You're right about that, over the allies. What he's doing in the process of doing this is he's legitimizing future Chinese discourses and current Chinese discourses on Taiwan. When the Chinese government claims that it has sovereignty over Taiwan, it can point to Trump and say, well, look, Donald Trump is doing exactly the same thing we are. It legitimizes great power competition of a very particular type. It's a return to 19th century style politics in which anarchy, that is to say, a world situation in which there's no superior authority to govern the behavior of the great powers, in which anarchy and power politics will dictate international relations.
All right, well, there are some reactions that have come out, albeit not on the day, but the day after. A degree of incomprehension among European partners, says the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz. Is Trump serious? Perhaps not, says France's foreign minister.
You're asking me if I think the United States will invade Greenland? The answer is no. Have we entered an area that seems the return of the survival of the fittest? The answer is yes. And so, should we let ourselves be intimidated? Should we let worry take over? Of course not.
All right, so don't be worried. You don't agree with that?
Well, he's not going to invade France, that's obvious. You know, when Colin Powell, after France's veto in 2003 at the United Nations over the Iraq invasion of Iraq, Colin Powell called Dominique de Villepin and said, Dominique, they used their first names, Dominique, France is going to be punished for this. Dominique de Villepin suavely responded, what are you going to do, Colin, invade France? So obviously, you know, Trump is not going to invade Denmark. He's not going to seize Greenland by force. He might do something in Panama, however. You have to look at this in a differentiated way. He's putting an enormous amount of pressure here. Greenland, for the United States, has represented a security issue since the First World War, since before the First World War. And it has been an increasingly important security issue since then, now given the competition around the Arctic with China, Russia, and other places.
Let's talk about that right now. Yeah. Trump suggesting a swap for Greenland during his first term in office. Emerald Maxwell looks at the reasons.
Reacting to Donald Trump's ambitions for Greenland, its prime minister was categorical. The island may be aiming for eventual independence, but it was not for sale.
Greenland belongs to the Greenlanders. I just want to repeat that, as I always have.
Trump has once again raised his interest in taking over the semi-autonomous territory from Denmark. Greenland has been part of Denmark for more than 600 years, but is now broadly self-governing, with Denmark maintaining control of foreign affairs and defense.
People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security.
Straddling the Arctic Circle between the United States, Russia, and Europe, Greenland is strategically significant. The territory is already home to a large U.S. military base, but the United States wants to expand it to better monitor potential Arctic threats. The island is a member of the US-led military alliance NATO through its links with Denmark. But Trump on Tuesday did not rule out using military force to take it. Denmark's foreign minister said it was open to talks with the United States to safeguard US interests, while the Danish prime minister downplayed the threat.
The United States is our most important and closest ally. We have supported each other in difficult situations, so I cannot imagine that we will come to that.
Trump first expressed interest in buying the mostly ice-covered island in 2019, but was rebuffed. This time around, he's threatened to slap Denmark with very high tariffs. Underneath all that ice is a land rich with minerals and oil, although its government has banned extraction of oil and natural gas for environmental reasons. Greenland plays an outsized role in the climate changes taking shape all over the planet as its ice continues to melt at a faster rate every year. Meanwhile, development of its mining sector has been snarled in red tape and opposition from indigenous people.
Vili Sovndal, following up from that report, is this all about expanding a military base and the negotiations surrounding that?
Yes, the Americans have been present for decades in Greenland, but that's a fully another discussion. This discussion is about, and I agree with the analyze from before, we have a very aggressive American president who is testing. And there's two answers on this aggressive Trump approach. One is to make a much stronger European cooperation, both on foreign policy and defense. I think that's shown the necessity of that again by what's happened the recent days. And the other thing is to make, from EU, more allies reaching out to the global south and to try to be a power in between a very aggressive new American administration and a more aggressive than before China. And there I think Europe has to find its way and do it quick. We do not have unlimited time. Not that we should not cooperate with US, but we should do it from a position of strength.
Do it from a position of strength. Just another question. André Lezic-Pierchi watching that report. It's not the same Greenland as before if there's global warming.
Absolutely, because the most strategic part is obviously the bases, but the fact that with ice melting and trade becoming a very important part, the northern route is becoming a key part. So the maritime routes and the access, the capacity of controlling also all the Chinese ships or Russian ships that now take the northern route is obviously strategic. That's point number one. Let's not forget that it's an uranium-rich country, and energy is the name of the game, of course, for energy production, but also think about AI and everything linked with the technological revolution. Technology is now 30% of the US stock market. So it's really today powered by cheap energy. So you will be able to frack gas in the US, but nuclear is a second point. And the third thing is the rare earth. I mean, the whole transition in particular to renewables and to new energy is something which is fueled by minerals. And you have particularly two minerals in Greenland which are critical, which are neodymium and dysprosium. You use them for windmills. The paradox is that Trump wants to ban windmills from the US, but also it's used for semiconductors, it's used for missile guiding systems, and today China controls 92% of the refining of these particular critical materials, which are called permanent magnets. They basically have much stronger magnetic capabilities. So for these three reasons, maritime, uranium, and critical Greenland is absolutely strategic.
Philip Golub, is it really the case that this is what it's all about? I mean, is it too? We always say, "Oh, where's the oil?" Was it all about extractive industries? Is that what powers, pardon the pun, global politics?
Well, I mean, that's I agree with what's just been said. That's a significant part of it. I mean, economics and international economics and international politics are deeply intertwined. They cannot be separated in any significant way. It's about great power competition. It's about great power competition. If you look at the Panama case, you know, on the both sides of the Panama Canal, you have a Chinese state-run company that has shares in two ports on both sides of the Panama Canal. It's about great power politics. It's about the way in which the Trump crowd in particular envisions great power politics going forward and great power competition going forward, you see. And it's very different from the understandings of more sophisticated parts of the U.S. elites who actually understood Trump doesn't seem to understand this, who actually understood that, for instance, that NATO is a force multiplier for the United States, that international alliances are a force multiplier for the United States, that international cooperative agreements are a way to stabilize world politics. Trump thinks in a different way, and his crowd thinks in a different way. They're thinking in terms of national great power competition going forward. The Europeans will have to align with him, in his view, or be outside of that competition.
If I can just complete that part, the difference to Trump one is that there was his crowd, I agree. But on the fact of national security, if you think Panama or the competition on critical materials with China, there is a huge consensus way beyond
on China,
MAGA.
Yes.
In Washington. I was there early December. I was struck that even the more, I would say, liberal part, when you talk about China, when you talk about great power competition, there's a complete consensus. So Trump is really very much backed there by, I would say, China. And that concerns Panama and Greenland in relatively
similar. So let's try to follow this logic.
Canada is probably different.
I was going to, or is it? Guillaume Lavoie, let me ask you, because if Greenland has coveted natural resources, what can we say about Canada? Is this what it's about, the spat? It's not really just about Justin Trudeau?
Oh, it has very little to do with Prime Minister Trudeau, who's been in power for 10 years, which spans over the first term of Donald Trump. Mr. Trudeau, after 10 years in his party, it was only the natural course of events that it would come to the end of his mandate and his tenure. Now, we're in a world where the real strategic opponent or adversary is China. And in a world of microprocessors, rare earth material, energy would be a very valuable commodity. And then blocs would be rivals amongst each other to have access to those materials. Canada, as Greenland, is one of the great world depository of those rare earth materials, strategic minerals. Perhaps that's where Trump is making a mistake. If he really wants to confront China, he'll need the help of allies, Western world allies, typically. And perhaps this is where the rest of us have been perhaps guilty of hubris. The United States is a superpower. The natural inclination of superpowers is to behave like such, governed by self-interest, because they can. And so even though since the Second World War, the game has been the best way to preserve America's self-interest has been a world governed by the rule of law. More and more, we're going into an era where a world governed by the world of the rule of strength seems to serve, at least in the very short term, that goal. So perhaps the rest of the world has to take notice, and not to go as far as to quoting the movie Love Actually, but in response to a bully, one has to be prepared to be much stronger. And perhaps that's a big wake-up call of Trump's recent declarations.
And on that score, is it a moment where you are of national unity, Canada, which is now heading into a general election campaign?
Well, the whole thing about Canada being a 51st state is a non-starter. There's no political basis. Even the Conservative Party, which is to the right of Mr. Trudeau, has condemned the idea. For one thing, you know, Canada rejects that offhand. Dealing with the United States is it's one of priority number one and number two for Canada. But he's not dividing Canada on that proposal. Perhaps even on the contrary, especially the premiers, the prime ministers of each provinces, because Canada is more than the federal government. It's a very decentralized federation. Everyone is sort of gathering together to develop a unified, clear strategy to respond to that kind of threat.
On that point, Willy Svendal, recently the Danish prime minister, recalled the defense budget, saying it's not enough, that she needs more. There is right now with these Russian and Chinese ships that have been suspected of damaging cables in the Baltic Sea, this idea of the growing tension, and Denmark is strategically located in that respect. Your thoughts on Is Donald Trump going to be part of the problem or the solution in the long run when it comes to confronting Vladimir Putin?
We don't really know. Also because also here he's speaking with two voices. Sometimes he's very close to Putin, and what he's making now of strategic moves might also interpretate that he's afraid of Putin getting too much power. But I think the important thing is that it's not a discussion of a certain percentage. The fact is that we are spending a lot of money on defense in Europe. We're just not getting enough for the money we spent, because there are so many national considerations, meaning every country wants to have its own products. So if we want to be stronger, the most important thing, I think, is that we make a common policy and defense policy where we put together the money we spend and make a lot more effective production of weapon industry than what we do today. I think that's an important move, and that's a move Europe is taking just now. There's been pointed out a new commissioner for defense. We're going to make a committee in the Parliament for Defense, which I'm going to be a member of as well, I hope. So I think we really have to step up in Europe being able to act. But there's one European problem which should, I think, also be mentioned. And that is that not only Trump, but also Musk are very much interfering in European policy just now. They do it in Germany. They do it in Britain. They do it with very much confrontation with the European policies. And maybe that might be the driver that European family would push together and get some strength both in foreign policy and defense.
I want to visit that second point of yours in a moment. But first, picking up on what you said about Europe needing to have a stronger defense, Andriy Kirkpatrick, don't look too much at France these days. We have a big budget deficit problem jeopardizing the defense commitments we've already made. How about in Germany, where there's a snap election coming up? The Germans, which have boosted their defense spending, but to do more, they're going to need to get away from fiscal purity.
True, but where I would completely agree with the minister is the fact that we need to have much bolder move. And I don't know what we need, because we already had the invasion.
How about more spending on defense?
The 80%, 78% precisely, of what we spent additionally since the invasion of Ukraine, which is much more a challenge for us than anything that Donald Trump can say, has conduced to 80% of spending in equipment which are not European. By the way, it would be interesting to see how Denmark defends Greenland, because Denmark's Air Force is, I think, equipped with F-35. So you can expect that these F-35 will be not functional in case, totally improbable, of course, of a confrontation. I just say that on the side. I mean, currently what we are seeing is the US, Trump, but also Musk and also Zuckerberg now on free speech and on moderation, we can talk about that later, it's not them the problem. The problem is they are actually using our weaknesses. The fact that we don't have a strategic compass. All those who have been in defense affairs, and I hope the minister will be in this committee, because we need much bolder. We have not been strategic. We have a transport plane, the A400M. It has a single name, but it has 11 different versions, because every single air force wants its little. The French want the side door, the Germans want the back door for paratroopers, etc., etc. So totally a joke currently. The only thing we can do in common are things which are useless. For example, the next European drones, which is a 100 million piece drone that you will never use on a battlefield. Look at what's going on in Ukraine, where you need much cheaper things. Third thing, the speed is not there. We've been discussing about a common Europe defense policy for years. The current fighter jet is at the brink of collapse, the famous FCAS, or SCAF, as we say in France. So we need much more strategic thinking. We need courageous moves from different member states, France, Germany first, to abandon some of their parts in order to be focusing on some essential parts. And on that one, the only thing we need is much more strategy. And the fact that we have no strategy is actually a huge open door for our enemies to just, or adversaries to actually just pull in. And so, to be honest, I'm not very hopeful, because I think the current construct of a commission which is weak, of member states which have no money, of a parliament where you don't, where the defense committee is not even a full-fledged committee, I don't see a powerful, bold move that is needed today. And, you know, I don't know what we need more than Ukraine or Donald Trump's comments to make us move. So,
all right, you mentioned those F-35s that are U.S.-made. So you could say that vast swathes of the internet that we use is U.S.-made. On Monday in this studio, we discussed Elon Musk's active campaigning for far-right leaders in Europe. We just heard more on that from Vili Zovnal. Now, to avoid the wrath of Trump, Meta, following Twitter, or X's lead, and scrapping fact checkers for its Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp platforms in the United States. It's coupled with what could be interpreted as a show of defiance to EU regulation against an absolutist free speech that stirs hate and violence.
We're going to work with President Trump to push back on governments around the world that are going after American companies and pushing to censor more.
Philip Golub, your reaction to that statement from Mark Zuckerberg?
Well, there's Zuckerberg and then there's Musk, of course. Musk has gone much further than Zuckerberg. Musk is...
But he's saying they're going to work with the president to...
Yes, yes. And then Musk is actually publicly supporting elements of the far right in Europe, some of which have deep neo-Nazi roots. So you can actually qualify Musk at the current time as a techno-fascist. Maybe he was a libertarian before, but now he's a techno-fascist today. Fascist in the political sense. He's supporting fascist movements, neo-fascist movements, if you want to be more polite, throughout Europe, and he's intervening in European sovereign politics in a very direct way. Now Zuckerberg is going to be doing the same thing by not mediating.
All right, but these are mere individuals. What's going on?
They're groups within Silicon Valley. Powerful and influential groups of people who are involved in techno disruption of their own, all right? Mark Andreessen, Musk himself, others, financiers, Horowitz. There's a whole group of people there.
Are these outliers, or do they represent the United States of America?
No, they represent a significant fraction of Silicon Valley, okay? And they have financiers behind them that represent a significant fraction of finance. They don't represent all of finance. They don't represent all of Silicon Valley, but they represent a significant fraction of this. They're aligning behind Trump because they see their interests in aligning behind Trump. They see their own future commercial interests as being part of that. So it's not the United States. It's an elite fraction within the United States, which is now in an extraordinarily influential position within the White House itself. How their interests and Trump's nationalist geopolitics fit together, we have to see how that works.
Guillaume Lavoie, do you have the answer to that? What's the common interest between this part of Silicon Valley and Donald Trump?
Well, in a way, there's very little ideology with Trump, but behind him is essentially three things. A America first economic policy, which means tariffs for the others and subsidies for mines. A isolationist foreign policy. And the third one is not to be disregarded, which is the deconstruction of the administrative state. So getting rid of regulations, opening the door as much as possible for not business in general, but business in the know, local business, those who have interest and are connected to politics. He wants politics to govern regulatory environment. And in that sense, I see the greatest rivalry emerging between the EU and the US, between Brussels and Washington. And that's what Trump will be pushing. And let's not forget that he's on, not borrowed time, but a fairly short runway. The next midterm election are in 2 years. So the next 12 to 18 months for Trump are crucial in order to do as much as he can to establish those. So that's why you have all these businesses trying to line up with Trump or behind Trump.
And from where you're sitting, does the European Union seem as weak as described a minute ago by André?
Well, it depends on which file. But if in the end, there will be, I guess, three great sources of power, or center of powers in the world. It'll be China, the European Union, and the U.S. And if any European country wants to have some sort of a counterbalance to a Trump-led world, it needs to go through Brussels, I'm afraid.
The French government spokesperson warning of physical and virtual acts of aggression on the part of global superpowers. Let's listen to a clip from the morning briefing.
So today, there is the rise of the blocs, which can be translated into a form of imperialism that is materializing both concretely in declarations like those of Mr. Trump, which are declarations about the physical, the annexation of entire territories, and then also digitally, I was going to say, through the digital force of a certain number of global operators, whether they be Americans, Chinese, or others, to order and direct discourse.
D'ordonner la pensée et d'orienter la pensée.
So she used the I word there, imperialism, and she puts the United States and China in the same boat. Are you surprised to hear a French government spokesperson saying that?
Well, it's quite rare for a leading European official to say things of this type. I think it's important to say, you know, if you look at the long course of history, European overseas imperialist expansion in the 18th and the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century was overseas. The colonization process, the building of formal empires overseas was matched in the U.S. case by the building of a continental empire, a territorial expansion throughout the North American continent, and then towards the end of the 19th century, international expansion of the United States at the expense domestically of the Amerindians, at the expense of a number of countries. If you think of Alaska, why is Alaska a U.S. state today? Alaska was purchased by the United States in 1867 by Stewart as an act of coercive economic diplomacy. The Russian minister who negotiated the deal with the U.S. said, well, he gave us the choice between selling it or just seizing it, you see. So there's a long history of territorial expansionism of that type in the U.S. I'm surprised that that a French spokesperson would actually characterize this as imperialism on the part of what Trump is doing as imperialism. I think it's a rather accurate description.
Willy Sovendal, do you agree that with what we've heard from Mar-a-Lago, you can put U.S. and China in the same boat?
No, I do not agree. I think what Trump is standing for is an extreme nationalism, America first. In that way, you can compare to China, which is also very much a nationalist development, especially in these years. You could put the same on Russia, on the Putin. So I think the real struggle is a struggle between those of us who believe in strong international cooperation, strong international institutions, and the ones who want to weaken them. Because, of course, if you believe in the nationalist way of developing your country,
it's more than just nationalism here. She's talking about a form of imperialism.
I think I would not go that far. But of course, there is a cooperation, which I don't know if we should discuss that now, but where both Trump, but also Elon Musk and some of the allies are very much cooperating narrowly with the extremists. And they are really extreme parties in Europe, with roots back to Nazism and fascism. And I think that's really worrying, that there is this very strong cooperation from US to Europe. And I think what we have to struggle for are strong international institutions. And there might be a lot of countries, not only European, also Canada, also New Zealand, also Australia, also countries in South America and Africa, also countries in Asia, who would be interested in a cooperation where we still have strong international institutions to deal with conflicts, to deal with climate problems, to deal with wars. And I think we have to strengthen, from European side, our reaching out to the rest of this world who want strong international institutions. Because the point is that if it goes into the direction of Trump, we are all losers in that game, except for some extremely rich Americans. And that's not the world I want to develop.
André Lizicuk-Petry, we're talking as the far right's been given a chance at forming a government in Austria. It would be a first ever far right chancellor there since the Second World War. Your thoughts on the number of people who you could call Trump whisperers on this continent is growing.
I mean, the dominoes continue to fall. And unfortunately, I don't think that Austria will be the end of this long line of Hungary, Italy, Czech Republic, and now Austria. I think Chancellor Scholz is watching very closely, and Merz from the CDU.
Slovakia, you meant.
Slovakia, sorry. And I think the Germans should look at what happened in Austria, because it's not completely clear that the CDU will win a striking victory in February when you see what just happened in Austria. But we'll see. I think...
And the CDU could do a deal with the far right?
For the moment, it has refused to do so. It has refused to do so, for example, in Saxony, where there was this possibility, and this didn't happen. So I don't expect that to happen at the. But it could have an AfD, which is much stronger than even what the polls predict. We'll see. It's going to be in a month and a half. But my point is to see is I think it's a consequence. I mean, the fact that Musk, Trump, Zuckerberg is pushing so much and even calling now Europe, that was the words of Zuckerberg, as you know, censorship and those countries who want to suppress our free speech. The fact that Trump is going after Greenland, the fact that now the extremes are going into power, I think it's a symbol of our weakness. And I'm also on a moral ground interested in the rule of law and international institutions. But let's not forget, we are interested in these institutions because they protect the weak. And I think the Europeans need to learn again the language of power. They need to learn again the word they invented, real politics. And today, real politics is you can achieve your goals and your values only if you are strong. And right now, I don't see any sign of that in Europe. I see a lot of speeches in France. I see a lot of speeches in Brussels. I hear that the European Commissioner for Defense, the only mandate he has for his 101st days is to do an action plan. I mean, Trump is not yet president. He's already actioning and sending his envoys to Greenland. I mean, the contrast is so striking between action on one side that we might regret and, you know, empty talks and absence of action. I think the Europeans really need to wake up, not in a few weeks, not in a few months, but literally now. And I think it's existential. It was Mario Draghi who said that. We live really at an existential moment of the European Union and the European project.
And it's not even January the 20th yet. André Lizicuk-Petry, I want to thank you. I want to thank as well Philip Golub, Guillaume Lavoie for being with us from Montreal, Vidi Sumdal for being with us from Copenhagen. Thank you for joining us here in the France 2040 debate.